Welcome to the Breathful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's breath story is with Maya Inat. Maya's second home birth was in strong contrast with her first. Instead of almost 3 days, labor flowed so fast that her midwife almost missed it. During her first, the pushing stage was also quite difficult, and so much of the preparation she did during her second pregnancy was guided by a desire to minimize trauma and bring heaps of pleasure and joy into the experience. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Girl Trek, a civil rights health movement to inspire 1 million Black women and girls to develop a daily habit of walking and reclaiming the streets of their neighborhoods. Join their Black History Bootcamp Challenge for 21 days of walking through Black history to celebrate powerful foremothers. Learn more at girltrek.org. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Birthful and for all the love you give the show. I, of course, truly appreciate it. For this episode, I am donating the sponsorship spot to Girl Trek and their Black History Bootcamp Challenge. Please follow them and give them some of your time, goods, or funds if you can, and join the challenge while you're at it. So this is it, right? This is the last new episode for the podcast until September. And so before we dive into the show, I want to remind you of a few things. First is that you can continue to sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation course. That is available at any time from anywhere. But if you want to take my Own Your Birth preparation classes, then you need to register right away as the new series starts Monday, July 6th, and I am not going to be doing another series before September, probably till October. There is even a lovely package where you save a bunch of money if you sign up for both classes, the postpartum preparation and the birth preparation. So go check it out at birthfulcourses.com. And if you are interested in one of the scholarship spots reserved for this series, you can send an email to info@birthful.com with the subject line scholarship to apply for a spot. And the scholarships are reserved for those going through economic struggles, with priority being given to Black, Latinx, Indigenous, and other parents to be of color. So then lastly, I wanted to close with a small request. If you feel the podcast has been an integral resource of your pregnancy, birth, postpartum, or even your doula journey, and you've listened to hours and hours of content without supporting our sponsors, becoming a patron, or purchasing any of my classes, then please consider doing any of those things or saying thanks by buying me a coffee through buymeacoffee.com/birthful if you can. And if you can't, you know, continue to listen, share it with your friends, spread the word, as that is also a way to show your support. Thank you so very much for all your love and for being a part of the Birthful community. All right, so my guest today is Maya Inat, who is going to be sharing her very two contrasting home birth stories. And she also shares about the adjustments they had to make to deal with the pandemic. So here we go. Maya, welcome to the show. I am very excited to have you here and to hear all about your story.
Thank you.
And congratulations on what sounded like a fantastic flowing birth. And we're going to get to the details. But before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I live here in Graham, Washington, which is a small town. We have a little community here. We have 20 acres and it's subdivided in 4 parcels. So we have my parents who live out here with us, and my husband's parents, and both my sisters have houses on our 20 acres as well. So we're really happy here and where we live, and really embracing the community living. And with that, we've extended, we're actually opening up a health center here in our local town with yoga and all sorts of, we have a float tank, and we're in the process of construction right now. We're on halt with the COVID, but Soon enough, we'll be back in construction, and we plan to open up here in a couple months. And I had my first son. He's 3 and a half, and it was probably about 4 months after he was born. I myself went through doula training, and I've been to six births since I've done my doula training, and have really kind of shifted my own yoga practice and my own yoga teachings, as I'm a yoga teacher as well, and geared it a lot more into women empowerment and really embracing the feminine energy within myself since birth. That was really ignited with the birth of my first son, and sharing that with my community. It's a deep passion of mine to connect with other women and their femininity, and through not only their birthing process of a physical child, but any sort of birthing, metaphorically or symbolically, that women are experiencing. I take that role seriously to serve other women and the feminine energy within my community. And so that really enhanced my second birth that I'm here to share today with my son, who was born this March of 2020. And I had a really nice foundation for the knowledge that I had been using to serve other women, and how I kind of doula'd myself through my own pregnancy and my birth. So I feel very empowered with myself, and kind of that empowerment that I've always used towards other women, I was able to bring that to myself and empower myself through my own journey. And I'd say it was really quite successful. I'm just so pleased with how birth was with both of my sons, but specifically what I'm here to share today with my second son. There's been a evolution within myself that has brought me to this place of that story, and I'm so excited to share.
And I'm so excited to hear about all that evolution because I love the transformation and the evolution and what birth does to us. And I can totally hear the journey that you've gone through and can see myself reflected in some of it in the sense that it's been through birth work that I've found so many parallels and things to take away and bring into daily living and just general interaction with people and dealing with, there's so many parallels of what needs to happen during the preparation of pregnancy and birth and postpartum to other experiences in our life. So yeah, I totally hear that that can be so soul filling for sure. Yeah. So, and how exciting that you've got that set, that community village of support already set up in the way you guys are choosing to live, that you've got your village already close by. I'm sure that's been wonderful for this postpartum period.
Oh my goodness, yes. And it actually was created with the pregnancy of my first son. As soon as I got pregnant, I knew that we needed a nest. And the current situation that my husband and I were in at that point, I just wasn't completely satisfied. And we created this dream here. And it was because of pregnancy that that really was brought out in me, of this deep desire to have a nest with support. And, as you know, it's really important for women, and for all of us. I feel like it's deep within us to be tribal in this way. But for postpartum, it's been an absolute dream this time. With my first son, it wasn't quite created. We moved in a year and a half ago. So yeah, this postpartum has been very different than with the experience of my first son, and I know that this has a huge part in it, is this sense of community and support.
So take me back to 4 years ago when you were pregnant with your first son. Where were you at in terms of birth wishes and preparation?
So with my first son, I knew I wanted to have a home birth. My mom had a home birth with me. I was born at home in the water, and so I didn't really know much different. I knew that, you know, most people have hospital births, but for me, I was brought into the world that way. So it was a lot more familiar. And there wasn't as much fear, I think, as some women have for birthing. I knew it was okay. And so I found a midwife who served me wonderfully through my pregnancy. I am a yoga practitioner. And so physically, I think I was really tight. I actually linked the episode of can exercise during pregnancy make labor and birth harder? For me, this time around, that was huge because of my experience with my son the first time around. I was really, I think it was really a blossoming that was happening in that area of my body, as I had never really accessed some of the energies that were there in my womb, as I don't think any woman really can until they're pregnant, perhaps. You know, there's a lot of energetic work that happens within pregnancy. And I worked with a doula who really helped me to access my femininity. She lives in Mexico. And so my mom and I hosted a yoga retreat while I was pregnant down in Mexico. And that's how I met her. And while I was there, she did some beautiful ceremonies with me to help access my femininity and kind of awaken this area of my body. And there's some past trauma that I kind of moved through and released through that time with her. And I had cysts on my ovaries and abdominal surgery to remove my cysts when I was 17. And they removed my right ovary and my fallopian tube. And so there was kind of this releasing of the expectation that this area of my body creates disease or trauma or negative experiences, and releasing those ideas and really embracing that this area of my body can in fact not be about pain, but rather be about pleasure, and inviting pleasure into this area of my body, and working on self-pleasure and letting that be okay, and pleasure with my partner, and kind of beginning that journey. And I only allowed myself to go so far with it as it was all very new to me. And I did, the doula I was working with specialized, you could say, in orgasmic birthing, and really helped to bring pleasure out in all aspects of life, not just within birth, but in every place. And so I really prepared for that with my first son, and I'd say definitely I achieved a pleasurable birth with him. It was very challenging. It was nearly 3 days long, and absolutely exactly what I needed, I think, to have a long birth like that to really shake me up and wake me up as a mother. And I would never call it a painful experience. It was challenging, yes, but it was delightful in the way that it awakened me. And I think I'm able to have that kind of mindset about it because of the research and how I kind of reframed birth from not having to be geared around pain. But yes, it was challenging, and yes, there was extreme sensations, but it was more of an awakening, and the awakening was intense, of course, but
And I really appreciate, like, every time I speak with a different person sharing their stories of all the different ways people approach birth and how they approach what it is going to be for them. And for some people, there's a the need is more physical, for other it's more emotional, for other it's more hormonal, you know, and it sounds like for you it was more that emotional part of that, connecting to deep energy, connecting to that aspect of what of meaning making, more than just about and you know, they're all intertwined. We have a strong body-mind connection. But I'm very excited to talk to you about the orgasmic birth part of it. And I think we'll talk about it after the second one, because I know that it was even more so for your second one, because I want to get your description of that. I think you're probably the first person who's ever come up here and told me I've had an orgasmic birth. So I do want to hear more about that. But I always encourage people to go into birth with that curiosity of switching it up, and instead of coming at it from a point of resistant to pain, maybe do an exploration and switch it up to joy and pleasure. And I will link to the episode you mentioned on the if too much exercise during pregnancy can make labor harder, and also some episodes on pleasure and joy during birth that I've done. So then how was that birth? You said it was 3 days. It took 3 days. What's the summary of it?
Yeah, so it began on a Saturday evening, and it was very slow to begin. It was kind of teasing me in a way. And it was, I think, so all day Sunday, it was slow, and maybe 30 minutes apart, the contractions. And then, so it went into Monday, Sunday evening, it kind of started rolling. And on Monday morning, I called my midwife, and I felt for sure that things were more active. And she came, and I was checked at that point, and I was a two. And I remember feeling like, oh, man. And she even said to me, you know, it's going to get more challenging. And I was thinking, oh man, okay. Like I thought I had spoken to my mom at that point, man, I'm doing so good. I've got this. I'm doing so good. And it did indeed, it, you know, got much more challenging. And, this actually comes up in my second birth of this, concept of calling my midwife, and, she left at that point and said, I'm going to go take a nap, and, you go ahead and keep doing the work that you're doing. You're doing a great job. And so, yeah, that does come up in my second birth because of this idea of, I don't want her to waste her time. And, you know, she didn't make me feel like that at all, but it was still this, I thought I was farther along than I was. And so it did, you know, get more intense throughout Monday and getting closer and closer together. And I remember hitting the peak. And for my first birth, my first pregnancy, I listened to the episode you have with Wapio on the holistic stages of birthing. And I remember kind of witnessing my birth from an outside perspective and, kind of staging it as Wapio had described, of analyzing a little bit and holding space for what stage I thought I was at. And as I continued to progress, I hit this transitional stage where, and I know this is very common of like, holy cow, I don't know if the sensations are so strong. And, I with his birth, it's much more faded than my second birth. But I remember one of the main things I remember is kind of this observer. As far as the orgasmic birthing that I prepared for with him, it was more to, in a way, detach myself from the sensations that I was feeling and just observing the sensations. So the whole thing, it was kind of like there was two of me. There is the me who was experiencing the physical of the birth, and then there was the me who was observing and was more the mental and the emotional being of myself who was observing the physicality. And and that's how I felt the pleasure came, was because I wasn't too much within the sensations until that moment. I'm I'm speaking of when it was like, holy cow, and it was hard for me to detach myself from the physical sensations. And, that was definitely a turning point. And as Wapio describes the rest and be thankful, that came soon after. I was in the tub with my husband, and there was about an hour period where I went away. And I truly feel like I was downloading. And this being my first pregnancy, my first labor, my first birth, I think that was so important for me to receive. I truly believe I was receiving information into this motherhood, and I had a whole hour of rest. And after that, time period, at this point we're at like 2 days, my contractions really slowed down, and at that point my midwife had arrived. And then we went, she asked me, are you getting urges? Are you getting pressure and urges? And with him, I didn't really have that. It was, I really felt like I had to bring him in, like, come on, like, let's go, let's get it going. And it was so slow, and we ended up breaking my water at this point, because it was so hard to bring him down into this world. So after we broke the water, she says, do you have the urge? And at that point we started pushing, and I never really had that urge with him. And so I started pushing, and the pushing ended up being about 3 hours. And now looking back, I don't think he was quite ready. And I was kind of trying to force him out, and it worked. That's his story, was I the we counted for pushing, and really it was so challenging, just a lot of force behind his birth. And I think that was deeper than just with him. I think it was within me as well, of really pushing myself into motherhood. And I tore as well. It was like a big stretch for me, emotionally, mentally, physically, in the perineum. And I think there's a lot of symbolism with that, of the tear, and the pushing, and the forcefulness of like bringing my first child in. And it was equally as beautiful, absolutely. There's no doubt that his birth was exactly what it needed to be. And it shaped me for what I wanted my next birth to be, with the tear, and the forceful pushing.
So,
And yeah.
yeah, and so what was that switched from that experience? Like, how, I'd love your constant reframing of things in a with a curiosity and a learning and a digging deeper of into the meaning of it, of saying, why did this happen, but not like in a why me pity kind of way, but what can I learn from this? And just exploring it more, an exploration, that's it, the exploration that you experienced. So what did you find out when you went exploring that, what you experienced, so that it became the foundation for the preparation for your second one?
Yeah, so as mentioned, it was so challenging, and I think that was a direct connection into postpartum with my son, was that challenge. It brought me into really introspection, is that the word, of postpartum. And so immediately I was trying to process this, holy wow, that was really intense and really challenging. And that is exactly what postpartum was with my first son, was processing the challenge of labor, and the challenge of pushing him out, and the tear itself. I was in bed for about 2 weeks to recover from the tear. I didn't really want to walk. It just wasn't. Oh, and that's the other thing. I bled out with him a lot. It was a home birth, but my sister works in labor and delivery in the hospitals, and she was my midwife's assistant. And she had told me if I was in the hospital that I would have had a blood transfusion, because of how much I bled out after his birth. And the idea behind that is we believe that it was just so challenging on my body, and my uterus was so tired that it had the hard time clamping up after birth and contracting. And so I had the Pitocin shot immediately after I had the I bled out to help with that. But that, you know, correlates with postpartum as well, being that I just bled out a ton, and we believe I was low on iron at that point. And so my energy was really low. And yeah, it was a deep, deep experience for me. I went really deep, and I'd say it was dark as well. And just kind of feeling lost in motherhood and really processing what it means to be a mother. And so for leading into my second birth, I knew I didn't, that was my main fear really, was postpartum. It wasn't so much the birth. I knew I had worked with women at this point, and I felt confident in what birth is and confident in my ability to birth, but more so, it changed my focus on the pushing stage and the crowning and the actual birthing of the head and the body, not so much the labor. I didn't fear the labor. It was more, I didn't want to tear and I didn't want to bleed out, and I wanted postpartum to be a lot brighter. And so that's kind of how I geared things for second birth.
How deep was your tear?
You know, I don't even know. I'm not even sure. My midwife never told me, you know, a degree or anything like that. But what ended up happening is I got a flap. Somehow it created a flap. And about 4 months after birth, I kind of, I don't want to say reconstruct, but in a way I did. I went in and I had a procedure done to remove the flap and to stitch it back up. Yeah, I don't know the degree, but it was enough to where I didn't feel like I could really walk without being uncomfortable and in pain, and then needing to get the kind of reconstruct, I guess. It wasn't a reconstruct. They just removed the flap and then stitched back up. And so there's some scar tissue. And that was another thing with this birth, is I had the viewpoint of, you know what? I can heal that scar tissue this time around. Like, this birthing process is going to help me heal the wound that I had from my first birth. And that was huge for me. I really wanted, I had that intention of my body is going to stretch that scar tissue, and it's going to help to heal.
Mm. And you had mentioned that you felt that that you were, because of your history with exercise and movement during your life, you felt that your perineum was tight, and that might have been a reason why. Do you still consider that to be true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. In yoga, I'm not sure how familiar you are or your viewers are, your listeners are, but a huge concept of yoga is, it's called Mula Bandha. When you, you do different locks in the body. And so one of the locks that you do is right there in the perineum. And the concept of that in yoga is to hold the energy in. You don't want the energy to escape out, through male or female, through that area of the body. And so you're doing these locks, and in every posture, you're locking in and up, in and up. And so in a pregnancy and in birth, you want the opposite, really. You want the energy to go down and out, not in and up. And so it was this constant practice that I had from my yoga teachings and my own yoga practice as a student, of pulling everything up and in, and having to relearn that in this phase of life, it's not about in and up, it's about down and out and down and out. And so with my first pregnancy, I kind of got that. I was working on it. And I remember towards the end of pregnancy, my midwife, I had wanted a check to see how far I was. I wasn't in labor by any means, but it was probably around 38 weeks or so. And while she was in checking me, she said, "Have you been doing your massages, your perineum massages?" And I was like, "Yeah, I've been doing them somewhat, you know." And so she did it. She did the massage, and I was like, "Whoa, no, I have not been doing them like that. That was really intense." And so, by no means was I massaging the way that this time around. Now I knew how to massage myself and to really soften the perineum. And you know, I can get to that with this second birth and how that affected, because I truly believe, you know, there's a huge difference there. So yeah, to answer your question, absolutely, the perineum with my yoga practice was so tight before my first birth, and now I found a balance of how to tighten when it needs to be tightened. But I don't believe that in pregnancy, I don't think that's a time for it to be tight. To me, energetically, it's so important to let the energy flow down and out.
And you also have all these great hormones going through you, like relax and to just make everything soft and supple and stretchy and right. Like that's the energy you want, like very grounded, not tight and constrictive, but just expansive for sure. Yeah. Before we get into the details of your second birth, let's take a break. We'll be right back. So I was recently looking for something new to listen to during my walks, and I came across the Girl Trek's Black History Bootcamp 21-day series, and I cannot recommend it enough. It's refreshing, energizing, educational, insightful, inspiring, basically all the things. And of course, I immediately wanted to know more. So I went to their website, which is girltrek.org, and found out that the idea behind the Girl Trek movement started in 1996 when two friends, Morgan Dixon and Vanessa Garrison, had a shared belief in radical acts of self-care. Then in 2010, they challenged their friends and family to walk with them as a way to heal their bodies, inspire their daughters, and reclaim the streets of their neighborhoods. A couple of years later, Girl Trek officially became a nonprofit organization, and the work they've been doing ever since has been so monumental and incredible that in 2016, they became the largest health nonprofit for Black women and girls in the US. Now, at the beginning of June, they started their Black History Boot Camp, which is defined in their website as a 21-day walking meditation in the footsteps of Black foremothers for self-care and survival. And like I said, it is powerful work. The Black History Boot Camp is part of their mission of pioneering a health movement for Black women and girls grounded in civil rights history and principles through walking campaigns, community leadership, and health advocacy. And allies are also welcomed. Their goal is to be 1 million strong by 2020, and they are well on their way to reaching that goal. You can join the challenge by walking and listening to the Girl Trek's Black History Bootcamp audio series on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And the bootcamp also includes a Black Power playlist, resources, action steps, and a Black History story. And you can access that through the website at girltrek.org. Go check them out. And we are back talking to Maya about her birth experiences. So, as we get into the second birth experience, you just gave birth in March, and we are right now in the midst of the COVID pandemic. So, I want to know like what you did to prepare if there was anything different from the first time around, but also what did this pandemic cause in terms of your preparation or your outlook of your fears, your concerns, like what shifted? What did you have to do differently because of this?
Yeah, so you know, we had planned a home birth with this second birth as well, and I had already done the home birth with my first son. And so the concept of us preparing at home was already happening. We were already in nesting mode, and even the little things as far as people going to Costco and getting mass amounts of food, as we were preparing for birth and postpartum, we had already prepared in that way for postpartum and really hunkering down into this stage of life. So as far as that goes, in the preparation of being home and not being able to go grocery shopping, I feel really grateful that we were at the point that we were, because I was expecting him to come early, as he did. So right around the 15th, which is when things really started shifting in the United States, we were ready for him to arrive. And my husband and I went on a little baby moon there that weekend, and it was really starting to set in with us of holy cow, there's some major things happening in the world. And we were already feeling that way because we're about to birth this new baby. But it was like everyone else in the world was kind of getting on the same page as we were. And normally you don't really have that as much of like you're the ones that are preparing for your baby, and everyone else is kind of still going to work and everything is life is normal. But everyone started shifting to life was shifting here in the US, and people were talking about it. We were we went to our little we called it a baby moon. We went on a baby moon the weekend before he was born, and there was definitely a shift. I wanted to get a massage that weekend, and I couldn't get a massage because of the outbreak. And so it was setting in of like, okay, things are shifting. And so as far as how that affected the way we were preparing, other than the food that we were already getting and all the supplies that we already wanted for postpartum, the extra dog food and things like that, it started being like, okay, we need to make sure we don't go to the hospital. What is it that we can do so that we don't go to the hospital? And the main thing was that came up for me because of my firstborn son was jaundice, because he was born at home, but then at his 3-day checkup, there at home, he had jaundice, and so we had to go into the hospital, which was, for me, there's a fear of hospitals, and so it was like, oh, come on, like I had this beautiful home birth, and now I have to go to the hospital anyways, 3 days postpartum, and so I wanted to ensure that my second son didn't have the level of bilirubin that my first son did, and so. In postpartum, we made sure to go outside and get the light and made sure nursing was going really well to flush those bilirubins and making sure that he was pooping properly. And that was the extent, I'd say, of making sure that we don't go to the hospital. And fortunately, I felt I was in such a place with myself, and I feel really connected to the idea of oxytocin and really in the flow with physiological birthing, that things flowed so beautifully with my second birth. And there was no need for interventions or anything like that. And so I'm so grateful that, we were home and we didn't have to have the hospital as a location that we needed to be at this time of birth with my second son.
When you were having conversations with your midwife leading up to this, did anything change in in that preparation with her, or were there any adjustments in your transfer plan because of COVID?
No, the last two, at that point, we were meeting every week. And so when we would meet, it would definitely come into conversation of, holy cow, like what's happening in the world? This is, we would switch from me being pregnant and all, the different little tests that we would do, like checking baby and all of this. And then immediately we'd start talking of like, what's going on in the world? And, it was just confirmation of like, wow, this is a shift in the pregnancy for sure, of holding space for this epidemic, that this is a part of my pregnancy, and it's not bad by any means to be talking about this right now, but it's real. And let's talk about what's real and what's happening in pregnancy. As far as gearing towards different hospitals, we had never shifted any original plans that we had based on the virus. It was still a normal. And so as far as that, and the care didn't really switch because of this. It was more just a mental of, wow, Almost thank goodness that we're birthing right now because we get to stay home and we have an excuse to stay home. And also, my husband has an excuse to stay home now. And so it was more so that than actual bringing in, I'd say, fear of the virus because we were birthing at home. And I think we were all pretty confident that things were just going to flow exactly the way that they needed to. And not to say that we had our head in the sand, but we tried not to give it too much attention, just enough attention to be aware of it, but not enough to bring it too much fear, I think.
And you had done it before, so there was that, like it wasn't all new and unexpected. You had an idea of how things would go ideally. Yeah. So how did they go? When did this all start?
So it was Thursday, Thursday the 19th of March. And like I said, we had done our baby moon that week before, and I had been saying the whole pregnancy, I just want to get through the baby moon as long as he'll wait to the baby moon. And at that point I was 38 weeks, so it was pretty risky for me to book this baby moon at that point, but I was hoping at least that he was going to wait until after our baby moon. And
Did you guys go
I just
far?
we went, it was about an hour away. It's really deep into the woods, and it's where my husband and I got married. And so it's a really special place. We stayed in the same cabin that we stayed in for our wedding weekend, and definitely a huge boost of oxytocin. But yeah, it was about an hour, so there was, it wasn't too far to where if I started labor, we couldn't come home and do that. But yeah, so we were home. I was home. My husband and I was at work, and I had just got off a call with a yoga teacher that we were, my mom and I were interviewing to teach at our studio. And I could tell when I was in the call with her, it was like I was just out of it. And my mom was there prior, and she said, "Your belly looks really firm." And she poked it, and it was like really firm. And I thought, "Yeah, I know, he's coming soon." And so it was 11:45 a.m. I stood up from my couch, and my son, while I was on the call with this teacher, he was in watching a movie on my bed. And so I stood up from the couch, and I felt something shift. It was almost pinchy, like, and I, as I stood up, I thought, "Man, I feel like something just happened there." That was an interesting sensation, and I felt physically something had shifted within me. And so I went and laid down with my son, and as I laid down, my water had broke. It was like very obvious that my water broke. Was at as I shared earlier, was very different than with my firstborn son, as we had to break his water. And my water broke, and it was like, "Honey, you're older baby, your baby brother, he's coming." Like my water just broke, and I just felt so excited. It was like, yes, this is I it was such a perfect way to begin labor, of the water breaking and just knowing already I felt so far along, because with my son, that was like one of the last things that happened was water breaking. And so he said that, "My baby brother's coming today. My son is 3 and a half." And it was really important for me to have him involved in the birth. And we prepared him. He watched lots of birth videos, and we would make noises together. When he would go poop, we would grunt and be very vocal. And we would practice labor and have him hold my hand. And I really wanted him to be involved in the process. And so he was so excited his baby brother was coming. And so I called my husband and said, "Come on home. My water just broke. We're going to get started here soon." And I called my midwife at this point. So this is at around like noon at this point, by the time I had called my husband and called my midwife. And my contract, the water broke with a contraction, but I didn't have another one for about 30 minutes. And so at that point, it was probably about 12:15 that I had another one. And at this point, my husband's about to get home. And my dad, he had sent my dad over to help with the birthing pool. We didn't have that set up yet. So my dad is doing stuff with the hose and connecting it, making sure that the water is hot and blowing up the tub. And as I mentioned, all of us live here together. So my parents are here, my husband's parents, and my sister's as well. And so he did that. My husband got home and they finished up the pool, and my dad left at that point. And then we had a snack. We had some tacos the night before, and so we had some leftovers, and I had two burritos. It was just like, I'm gonna really eat, get ready for this birth, because I'm thinking, all I have to compare it to is my son's birth, which was so long. And so I'm thinking, I have to really prepare, and it's gonna be so long. And so I eat the two burritos, like thinking I need to really fuel myself up. And my sister calls. One of my sisters right now is in California, and so she wanted to chat with me about just life. And I'm like, guess what happened? And she's like, what? I'm like, guess. She's like, your water broke? I'm like, yeah. So within a 15-minute conversation, she called probably around 12:30. Within 15 minutes, I said, I have to go. This is intense. So within 15 minutes, I had probably about three contractions. And on that third one, it was like, yeah, I'm sorry, I have to let you go. This is getting to a point where I don't want to have conversation with you anymore about, everyday life. And so then my other sister came, and her intention for coming, she came around one. Her intention for coming was to hang my affirmations. I had done a woman's ceremony a week or two prior, and everyone wrote affirmations that applied to them, but then also applied to me. And so they kept one affirmation and gave me the other one. And I had this beautiful idea to hang the affirmations. And so my sister arrived, and it was like I tried to string the affirmations, and I'm trying to hole punch them, and the contractions, they just keep coming. And I'd say they were about every 5 minutes. And I remember at this point, I was laughing, like, I just can't believe they keep coming. Like, and I'm and it was joy to me of experiencing these waves of my son. And I was excited, and I couldn't believe that they were coming so fast, because again, with my son, it just took so long. And so we gave up on the affirmations. It was like there was no way that I could focus on affirmations when these sensations just kept coming. And so then my sister's like, what can I do? And at this point, my husband's like, we need to call the midwife. Like, she told us to call if they were 5 minutes apart. Like, they're definitely at 5 minutes apart, and getting, even more, four and three at times. And again, this is my water broke at 11:45, and it's around one. So it had only been like a little over an hour at this point. And so my husband calls, and he's like, they're getting closer. And I'm like, tell her I don't want her to come yet. We don't need her yet. I don't want her to come, and like, it's not real. And I didn't want to send her away like we had to with my firstborn. And so she's like, okay, I won't come yet. Call me when you need to. So he hangs up, and then my mom arrives, and she's so excited. She didn't really think much. Again, all of us were kind of in shock, because our only experience with my birth was this, my son. And so she's talking to me, like, so excited. She had went to the studio, and she had met with some contractors, and wanted to show me a video of all the progress that had happened there. We had some new walls that were up, and she's trying to tell me this and show me the video. And she's like kind of caught on of like, Okay, I can't. She's not at a place now where I can show her these things. And then she says something like, "Are you having another one? Are you having another one?" And I'm like, I'm just as shocked as you are. I just can't believe that they are continuing to come. And I got pretty firm and I said, "There needs to be water in this tub, and I need to get in this tub right now." And so that was right around, I'd say at that point it was around 2-ish. So somehow in my translation of time, we're at 2 now. And so my sister and my mom, they stayed. And originally that wasn't part of my birthing plan. I didn't invite anyone to the birth except for my husband. And I said, "We'll just wait until the day, and I feel strongly that whoever is going to be there will be there." And it worked out so perfectly that my sister and my mom ended up being there. You know, my mom was just excited to talk about the studio, and my sister was just going to help me hang the affirmations. And it was at a place where then they were in it just as much as I was. So the what we filled the pool up, and Phil's like, "You know, I think we should call Tanika again." Tanika's our midwife. And so we called, and she said, "I'd like to talk to Maya. Can I hear her? Can I hear her voice?" Or I don't think she said that. She just said, "I want to talk to Maya." And I knew as a provider that midwives and doulas like to talk to the woman to hear their voice. And so I was thinking, it's okay. I can act normal. Like I don't have to sound strained here. And as soon as I got on the phone with her, I heard my voice and I was shocked of like, holy cow, I'm strained. Like, and it hit me of, you know, she should probably come now. Like, I didn't realize that I was the way I was until I had spoken to her. And I had said to her something along the lines of, "You know, I thought that you didn't need to come, but now that I hear myself, maybe you do need to come." And like, I just can't believe how fast this is happening. And holy cow, I'm just shocked. I couldn't get over the fact at how quickly things were happening. And so I got in the tub, at the point that the water was in it and at a nice temperature. It was a little after 2, and so Tanika was then on her way at that point, and she lives about 50 minutes away. And so that was I had that in my mind of like, okay, she's going to be here in about 50 minutes, and kind of in a way trying to keep track of time. And as soon as I got into the tub, I felt at peace of I knew that this is where my baby was going to be born, and I was going to be in this space. And it was a calming to me, and confidence of, all right, this is it. You're here, and this is where it's going to happen. And there was really no doubt, because the way that things had progressed, it was like there's no stopping now at all. And at this point, they're about 3 minutes apart. And I got in the tub, and as far as correlating this, for those who are curious about orgasmic birthing, something that I listened to during my pregnancy was an interview with Amber, and I forget what her last name is, but a lot of people who research orgasmic birthing will find her. And because she has a video in Birth into Being of her, literally, you see her orgasming, of making it seems so pleasurable to watch her birth, and it's like, wow. And so Amber was a huge influence to my pregnancy. And one of the things that she says is, you want to allow the sensations to flow through you. And if you think of a hose that is kinked, you're not allowing the water to run through the hose. And as soon as you unkink the hose, then the water can then flow through. And so, in a way, I correlated that with the positioning in my body, is just continuing to allow my body to move in whatever way it wanted to move, to continue to unkink the hose and to let the energy move through me without stopping and without providing pressure. And so once I was in the tub, I let my mind go and let my body move so intuitively, without any sort of hesitation in what my body needed. And so, as I mentioned earlier, I was laughing, and that was a release for me of letting myself laugh. And that was in a way of unkinking the hose, releasing that laughter. And then another way in which I feel I would unkink the hose is I would, at one point I puked, and it felt so good to puke. And I don't know, it just came. I said, I'm going to puke. I need something to puke in. And I don't know how they got something so fast. And then I puked and it felt so good. And I cried and it felt so good to cry. And I did these deep noises, as many people are familiar with the noises that come with birth. And I feel like the noises were a huge way in which I can unkink that hose. And I just kept this, it was like a affirmation really of continuing to unkink the hose in whatever way it was, and through moving my body through the pool and repositioning myself constantly without even thinking about it, just going for it. And flailing at times of just not quite sure how to position. And so moving, and then the contraction would be over. And without questioning myself at all. And I continued to do that for about an hour. And as I said, it took my midwife about 50 minutes to get there. And through all of those ways in which I would unkink the hose, to me, that was the orgasmic part of letting myself flow so freely and feeling so connected to myself. At one point, I did, so something in my pregnancy I should mention that was really huge in my pregnancy was self-pleasure. And self-pleasure was never anything I had practiced before. I had always utilized my partner for pleasure. And to connect to myself in a way in which I can so deeply feel myself, that I know how to pleasure myself and orgasm from myself, was a huge pivoting point in my pregnancy and really affected this birth. Because then in birth, it wasn't about my partner. You know, he would touch me and, you know, it was great, but really it was me that was needing to be connected to myself and to know how to touch or to move or to express myself in a way that could bring pleasure and release the kink in the hose. Because to me, orgasm is it's not so, it doesn't have to be a peak of pleasure. To me, orgasm is a release of energy. And that's the unkinking of the hose. The orgasm comes when you unkink the hose and boom, the water flows out. And so to hold a space for myself to continue to unkink this hose, to me, that is the orgasm and the pleasure that comes with that, of the confidence and the empowerment of, wow, I know how to move myself and my body knows how to birth, and this is incredible. And so by all of those ways in which I mentioned of continuing to unkink my hose and to release that water, and to me, that water is the baby moving down further and further. And I could literally feel him moving down, which I could not, as I mentioned with my first son, I had to force my first son out. And with this second one, I could feel him moving down and down and down. And then it was a pressure. And my mom said, "Do you feel the urge to push?" And I said, "Pushing isn't part of my birthing plan." And I felt strongly that I didn't want to force him the way I had to force my son. And there was no doubting this time that it was what people would call the pushing stage. And that was important, that I didn't push with him. And instead, I just continued to unkink the hose. And I continued to move. And my tones began to get much deeper. And it was probably about 15 minutes, I'd say, of the last 15 minutes is when this shifted within me to where I could feel him moving down and my tones got much deeper. And I knew big things were happening at this point. The movements were much bigger at this point. And I basically roared him out. It wasn't like Amber when you watch Amber where she's like it's so sensual and sexy. Mine were more like deep roars and very, very what's the word? I don't even know the word. It was empowering to hear myself, that's for sure. It was like this part of myself, this lioness woman that came out at this point of allowing my tone of voice to match the sensation that I felt in my body, which was very deep. And I could feel his head began to come out, and again, it was important to me that I didn't tear. And I would soften, whereas with my first son, I would tense. There was a tensing with the push, and this time I wanted to be soft and not have to push him, but rather allow him to do it himself. And so my tone was so deep, but my body was, I would soften as things would tighten. And if you watch my birth video, I actually am chanting to myself, stretch, 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 stretch. And I am. You can witness me softening and allowing myself to stretch and then roar again, and then I would soften and stretch, and so his head then was coming, and my midwife just then arrived, and she was getting her stuff set down, and I said, "His head, it's out. His head is out." And she said, okay, she came up and, just you watch the video, it's so beautiful. She comes up and she so slowly comes and she smiles and she was so confident in me and I could feel that from her. And I knew that if she didn't come, I was going to be okay. But something about her being there, I just love her so much that immediately I felt just so safe, and she's here now, and so it's almost like now the rest of his body can come out. And so she just said to me, with your next contraction, I want you to lean back, because at that point I was on my knees and I was using the birthing pool with my forearms kind of leaning forward into the pool, or I guess out of the pool. And she said, I want you to lean back with your next contraction and you'll pull him up to your chest. And so with the next contraction, I leaned back onto my bum and so at that point my knees were kind of into my chest, and his head was all the way out at this point, and she reached in. I didn't know what she was doing, but she was reaching in to see if the cord was wrapped around his head. And I said to her, no, don't. I want to do it. And this is something we had talked about in pregnancy of, do I want to catch my own baby? And I said, I do, but I'm open to what the circumstances might be if you need to be involved. And so at that point I told her, no, like get away. I want to do it myself, even though, really she was checking the cord. She wasn't trying to catch my baby. And And so my hands were very involved. I was touching his head and also kind of, I think, touching and stretching my lips around him as well, and trying to kind of help him out, which again, for my first son, that wasn't the case. The midwife was doing a lot of work. And so my hands were there, and I say to him, "Come on, baby, it's time for you to come out. It's time for you to come out. Like, come on, I'm here. We're here. We're ready." And there he came. The rest of his body came out. And he was underwater for a few seconds, to where I was able to flip him over, because he came out face down. I flipped him over so that he was face up. And he was under for a moment, to where I could pause before I pulled him up to my chest. And I pulled him up, and I put him right on my chest, and it took him a moment as he came out of the water to take his first breath. I think it was such a smooth transition for him that he wasn't quite sure maybe that he was born yet. And I went ahead and sucked his nose. And after I sucked his nose, there was a breath that he took, and then he started to cry. And my first son was quite floppy when he came out. He was gray and floppy, and with him, my first son didn't cry a whole lot. He was, I think, pretty shocked. And with this, my second son here in this story, he cried a he cried for about 30 minutes of adjusting, I think. And I could just feel him, and I was so deeply connected to him. And I really feel that my first son really paved the way for that, of this mother love that I had been working on for the last 3.5 years with my first son. And my first son has paved the way for this love. And now here I am immediately. And women have told me this, that you're going to melt over your baby. And I didn't feel that with my first son, but with this baby, I pulled him into my chest, and the amount of love that I felt and connection, and just, he was crying, and I had 100% confidence that it was okay. Like, I was his mommy, and it was okay, and I could just feel him and hold him. And I really didn't mention, as part of this, my son was there. I forgot to say that he came in about 20 minutes before, and it was so beautiful. He, "Good job, mommy. You're doing great." And then came in the pool with me, and wanted to snuggle in with us. And yeah, it was really so romantic, and very empowering to be able to catch him myself, and be verbal with my midwife too, of, "No, I want to do this myself." And then to have my son there, that was a huge vision of mine, and a huge preparation. And then for him just to be so authentic, and it just was so, he knew exactly what to do. There was no question that it wasn't a big deal to him at all that mommy was in labor and making loud noises, and that his baby brother was coming, and for him to hop right into the pool and to snuggle with us once he was born. And yeah, it was so wonderful. And as far as breastfeeding, he latched on right away. And I delivered the placenta there in the pool. It came about 30 minutes later once my son latched on. My second son, his name, and I see this in the video too. It's quite funny, because we hadn't decided on his name just yet. I had a name that I knew was his name, but my husband wasn't fully on board just yet. And after, right after birth, I look at my husband, I say, "His name is Hawthorne." And my husband just laughs, and it's like, you can't argue with the woman after she just did all that work. There's no way that you're gonna say no at this point. And so,
And try to change it now.
my second son, he is Hawthorn, and he nursed, and it started the contractions again, and the placenta came there about 30 minutes later, and it was such a fluid process into postpartum. It wasn't a huge challenge the way it was with my first baby, and it was so smooth, and there was so much love and confidence and empowerment and all of the things that I had been preparing for in my pregnancy, which I took it very seriously and researched on how to achieve what I wanted to achieve, and supported myself with the right people that would support my visions. And it all came true, even more so than I could have imagined, to deliver him myself, and for it to be as fast as it was, and so enjoyable. And don't get me wrong, it was incredibly strong sensations. That being said, I don't think it was as strong as my first son. And that I'll say I relate to my calcium and magnesium levels. I feel like I fueled my uterus better this time around than perhaps was the first time. And I think, obviously my uterus was t more tired the first time than this time. But it was it I don't want to say it was easy, but man, it was fluid, I should say. It was so fluid, and I really it just unfolded so beautifully, and I know it was because I was surrounded with such beautiful love and support, and I was very clear on my vision, and I just feel so empowered to move into postpartum with that story and with that support.
That is so fluid. So, and it's funny because that's pretty much what I like wish for every birthing person. I'm always saying, I hope you have a flowing birth. I hope you fa because there's no, you can't predict the circumstances. You can't predict anything else, but the one thing you can wish for is that it flows and that it continues. And I thank you for the phrase of unkinking the hose, that's really resonating with me, and I'm going to spread it around because that matches the flowing wishes, right? Of and that's all about supporting physiology as well. Like it holds it all in one. I'm loving unkinking the hose, definitely. And when you were describing when your son came in and got into the pool with you, of course he knew what to do because you guys had rehearsed it. Like the fact that you did scenarios with him ahead of time is so beautiful. And a way to incorporate him into, team baby. Like you're not an outsider, you're an insider. This is all part of us. And I have to ask you though, did you tear? What happened?
Yeah, so no, I had she called it like a minor. It was inside this time. And I think I would describe it more like a road rash based on the sensation that I feel. And she allowed me to use my finger too after birth to feel, she had put her finger in, and she felt a spot and said, and I went kind of ooh, and so I know what she's talking about. I wouldn't call it so much a tear as like a road a burn, I think
Yeah.
would be better.
I think
And
sometimes they use
so
the word abrasion.
yes, yeah. And so that was huge too. And I really did a lot of massage this time around preparing for that. I had a little wand, the little crystal wands, the yoni eggs that are getting more and more popular. I did a whole lot of massage, and And holding space for my tension, I think, was huge, of recognizing, at least from the first birth, where the scar tissue was, and then from past trauma, of holding space for the tension and just kind of putting pressure with the wand or with the yoni egg on these areas to release the tension. And it was uncomfortable, but I really feel that that was huge as far as not tearing.
And I think also that very slow crowning and releasing and letting everything move at its own pace without adding additional forces is also really huge.
Yes, yeah, like that, not that forceful, tense push, but rather just allowing the body to push, not so much. I didn't encourage the push any more than my body was doing itself.
Yeah, and that can be really hard to do, especially since we have such a cultural conditioning to push and get that baby out really quick once the crowning is happening. And yeah, crowning can take a bit longer, depending on baby's positioning, size of the baby, all the things, right? Your tissues. What you were telling me time by time, and then you, and rightly so, you didn't, because time became so fluid. But what, how? How long afterwards was he born? I know that we were talking about your sister showed up at one. I guess the midwife must have shown up closer to two.
So we called her a bit after two,
Oh.
and she got there right around, I'd say, 3:35. And my son was born at 3:41. So she was there, I'd say, about 6 minutes before he was born.
And then this time around, how your placenta came after half an hour, was there any extra bleeding? How did that go?
Yeah, that was huge as well. That I delivered my placenta and I didn't bleed out. And as mentioned, I feel that was huge as far as the way I felt postpartum with my firstborn was that bleed out. And I was confident after I delivered my placenta. Like I didn't have much fear at that point. Things had just flowed so fluidly that I knew it wasn't going to stop now. And I continued to nurse as well to help contract the uterus on that wound from the placenta. But yeah, no, I didn't bleed out. And actually, I'm done bleeding now, which with my son, my first son, I bled for 6 weeks. And I'm 3.5 weeks now postpartum, and I've finished my bleed. So the bleeding this time is not nearly as much as it was with my first son. And something I'll say is I've been really adamant about my iron intake. And my midwife had told me, I'm not sure if you've heard this before, but not only is it important for bleeding your iron levels, but she correlated low iron levels to depression as well. And she explained it to me as, I can't explain it nearly as well as she can, but it was kind of like it's a conduit. Iron is a conduit for, oh geez, and somehow it is correlated with depression. And so I feel like my high iron levels at this point is definitely correlating with my moods postpartum as well.
And I'm guessing as everything's flowing, you've been having a very, cocooned postpartum, letting everything just unfold, just like you did for birth.
Yeah, so at this point of life right now, everyone's really cocooned, and we are most definitely no different than that. It has been interesting as far as visitors. This time around, we plan to have visitors. And my sister, as mentioned, the one I was FaceTiming, she flew up from California. She had prearranged flights. And she's a labor and delivery nurse at a big hospital in LA. And we ended up not seeing her postpartum, just because we were really unsure of if she was asymptomatic because she works in a hospital, if perhaps she had been exposed. And so we saw her outside. She was staying with my mom, who is my neighbor. And we saw her outside a few times, but she was never able to get close to us and to see baby. And because she was staying with my mom, then we quarantined ourselves from my family at that point, because she was staying with them and close with them. And so it was 14 days before, then once she left, we allowed my family to come back into our home. And we're at, beyond that at this point of, they're back into our home and supporting us. But that was interesting, to have that experience of, my sister coming specifically to maybe be at the birth, but also we were thinking that at that point I would have baby and she would be able to see baby and hold baby. And, other than that, as far as the visitors, postpartum has been such a delight, and I felt really light. I'm also consuming my placenta, which perhaps it's placebo effect. If it is, it's definitely working. But I feel strongly that every time I get a dose of placenta, I have a few more doses left, and I just feel a whole lot lighter when I do that. And my husband being home too, because he was planning to take 1 week, and the timing was incredible. After 1 week, literally on the day of 1 week when he was planning to go back, our government here in Washington mandated that his work is considered non-essential. And so since that point, he's been home. So it's been an additional 3 weeks, and he pushed it out. Our governor pushed it out to May 4th. And so that will be 6, almost 7 weeks that he'll be mandated to stay home with me, which I'm just pleased about. And he is too, there's no doubt. He gets he likes to work. He likes to go and do. And so we've been doing things on the property, and it's been great to work in that way. But at least we're all home here together. It's been a dream come true.
Well, I'm really happy to hear about a very fluid birth story within this time of COVID and understanding that, not everybody has a home birth already planned, and the timing, it seems, worked really perfectly for you guys. But I will continue to try to do more stories around COVID. I really, really appreciate that this was so wonderful for you and that it happened just like you wanted. So, yay! Thank you for wanting to share your story.
Yeah, and I hope even for the women who maybe don't plan to have a home birth, maybe some women, I know a lot of women are choosing to switch their care to a home birth. But I really hope that this can empower whatever a woman decides. For me, the takeaway is that I was really clear on my wishes, and I surrounded myself with support that I knew would support me in what my wishes were. And so whatever a woman's choice is, whether they're choosing to switch to home birth or they're having a home birth or they're choosing to stay in the hospital or birthing center, whatever it might be, I hope that my story can bring empowerment to whatever their choices are, and to go for it and to research what it is that they want and to surround themselves with people that are going to support that and stories that are going to support that, because it's achievable. And I agree that things can change within the scope of birth and labor. But truly, to, as you said, to go with the flow of whatever unfolds, and to be supported through the whole process.
Focus on unkinking the hose, even if we can't control all the external things. Thanks again, Maya. If people want to get in touch with you or for any reason or learn more about what you guys are doing, I don't know, with your yoga studio, whenever that happens, how can they do that?
Yeah, so we have a website. We're in construction right now. Our website is Soul, SOL, like the sun, soulhealthyoga.com. And we have an Instagram as well and a Facebook, and that's at Soul Health. Yeah, we're I do practice doula work. I'm taking a little break right now, but even if I'm not offering myself as a birth doula, I still love to connect with women. And yeah, so if they're interested in connecting, I'm happy to conversate about all things life.
Well, thank you. I love it. Thanks again for sharing your story and continuing this amazing postpartum that you're doing. I love it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adriana, for having me.
Mighty ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And do remember to check out my birth preparation online class series that starts Monday, July 6th. It's around the corner. Go sign up at birthfulcourses.com to really get birth ready. And at the same place at birthfulcourses.com, you can also find information on my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes, and that will help you get ready for life with a newborn. But you want to take the classes before your baby arrives. So let's get to it with that too. Go to birthfulcourses.com to get you birth and postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you and the amazing Birthful patrons. Please follow girltrek.org, join their 21-day Black History Boot Camp, and consider giving them some of your time, goods, or funds if you can. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, here is what Maya had for breakfast.
Today's actually my birthday, and so it's significant to be able to record here for my birth story on my own birthday. So my husband made me breakfast. We had some fried mashed potatoes and some eggs and raspberries and some cottage cheese and avocado.
I'm Adriana Losada, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening, and see you in September. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Losada.